This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. It's been a common idea since the dawn of the industrial age. Machines taking jobs away from people that used to do them. Remember, we call that automation. And the beat goes on. Speakers at the World Economic Forum this year said, quote, about 7 million jobs will be lost, 2 million gained as a result of technological change in 15 major developed and emerging economies. Have we reached that point where more jobs are being lost than created by machines? Certainly, machines do excel at some jobs, and there are jobs where human labor is still invaluable. And as machines and robots and the Internet of Things technology continue to improve, what does the future of work look like? That's what we're going to be talking about. Our number 800-844-724-8255, 844-724-TALK. You can also tweet us at SciFry. James Manyika is a senior partner at McKinsey & Company. He is a director of the McKinsey Global Institute in San Francisco. He was one of the authors of a recent article analyzing which industries are and are not becoming automated. He joins me from KQED in San Francisco. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you, Ira. Glad to be here.
Howie Chostad is a professor of robotics at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and you may have seen some of his snake-like bio-inspired devices. He also works on medical robots. Welcome to Science Friday.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
James, you looked across industries at where automation has really taken hold and where it might be in the future. And what did you find there?
Well, this is very interesting, Ira, because what we did was we took an activity-level analysis and looked at something like 800 occupations across the U.S. economy. And what we found is that if you take an activity view, something like 45% of activities that are being done in the economy could be automated with already demonstrated technology. But if you translate that into, how many whole jobs could be automated, we found that the estimate, at least for the foreseeable future, for the near future, was about 5%. But this is the thing that was quite interesting, Ira, which is even though we may not see, at least in the next decade, whole-scale automation, we did find that something like 30% of activities in about 60% of jobs could be automated. So in other words, the jobs will actually change quite dramatically.
So what happens to the people who normally would do those jobs? I mean, the skill set level of those people, can they find other jobs doing other things?
Well, first of all, the people who are not likely to be totally replaced, they'll find that they'll be working a lot more with machines. Mm-hmm. In other words, machines will complement some of their activities, the 30% that I mentioned. And so those people are going to need to be competent, or the machines are going to have to be designed in such a way that the people can work with them. But I think to the question of people who may find their whole occupations automated, the roughly 5%, it's actually important to note that most of those are actually going to be in the middle skill category. And in that category, the middle skill category, the rates of automation may actually be as high as between 15 and 20%. So that'll be the hardest hit group. And I think
What kind of jobs are we talking about there?
So these are jobs that typically have three characteristics. There's a lot of data processing involved. There's a lot of data collection involved. And or they're working in highly structured environments. So think about somebody working on an assembly line in manufacturing, or think about a clerk who's capturing accounting records, for example. Mm-hmm. So these are all jobs where there's a lot of data processing involved and there's a lot of data collection involved, and you're working in a highly structured environment, which is very easy to automate.
Mm-hmm. Howie, you're a roboticist. Where do you see the future here?
So I see the future with robots creating jobs, empowering the American workers on today's jobs. I think we have only begun to really see the true potential of what technology can do for employment and for productivity.
Mm-hmm. Give me an example, for example.
So, for example, we use one of the automation companies with whom we work. They want to use these robots called collaborative robots that work in close proximity to people and with people at the same time in order for that person to carry out his task. Not only will he carry it out more quickly, they're actually more concerned about the quality of the task that this person will be able to carry out. Fewer errors, it's safer, and it's more ergonomic for the person as well.
Yeah, no, you brought up safety. I always think of one of the great advantages robots have is that they can go and work in unsafe places.
Yes, one of the benefits of robots is that they can get into hard to reach, difficult places to do tasks that people shouldn't be doing, like in a nuclear power plant disaster, for example. In this case here, what I mean by safety is that a worker, associate, working on a line, often they have to reach into configurations that are just hurtful to their bodies. They're not ergonomic. Now with this robot that's both a tool and a partner, they can carry out the task and it still be ergonomic. They're not going to get hurt. They're going to be more safe.
Is that sort of something like your snake-like robots get into hard-to-reach places?
Well, I do have a bias that I like thinking about snake robots getting to highly constrained spaces to do inspections and repairs and assembly tests. But yes, that would be an example.
Mm-hmm. Our number 844-724-8255. Let's go to the phones. People, some interesting ideas. Let's go to San Francisco and Alder. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, thank you for letting me on. I'm a really big fan of the program.
Well, thank you. Go ahead with your question.
So certainly. So actually, right here in San Francisco, I'm creating jobs through automation. We run 3D printing shops. So I'm actually curious about the guests. Like, with us, we're using 3D printers to make things locally instead of sourcing the jobs overseas. I was wondering what the guests thought about how, this might, granted, we're taking jobs away from, over in China, but we're actually bringing them back to America. So I was wondering about your thoughts on that.
James Manyika?
Well, I'm actually very excited about the potential for 3D printing in terms of what it might do to fueling a renaissance, if you like, in manufacturing. So I think what you're describing and you're working on is tremendous because it's going to enable more individuals to be able to participate in manufacturing. So I think that's a good thing. And I also think it's important to go back to something that Howie said, which is one of the things that we should think about when we come to these questions of automation is that quite often the output is actually better. In other words, it's not just about matching what humans can do, but it's also about going beyond that in many cases. Less errors, more perfection, better outputs, better products. So I'm actually quite supportive and I think I'm excited about the possibilities of 3D printing.
Do you ever see robots taking the place of where the human touch is needed, like in caregiving, hospitals, nursing, things like that? Howie, do you think that those are places that are, they really need a real person?
So in caregiving, obviously, you need a real person for that kind of relationship. But I do view us developing intelligent technology, robotic tools that can do some of the more mundane tasks that I don't think the caregiver wants to deliver, nor I think the patient wants to receive from a person. Certain kinds of bathing and cleaning, for example. I think a person would rather be able to do it himself with a mechanism than having another person come in and clean him.
We hear of and we know of robotic surgery going on. I mean, it's not going to put surgeons out of business, is it?
Oh, no. What we're really doing is this is a common theme. We're democratizing the ability to deliver medical care. Now, with robot surgery, as an example, we're offloading a lot of cases that surgeons may not even want to do. They want to do the special, the more complicated work. That's why they're surgeons. We can offload them to non-surgeons who can now deliver the same level of care, and I might add, not only minimally invasively, so it hurts less, but also at a lower cost and not requiring all the infrastructure that you would need in a hospital. So now you have a situation where surgical robotics, are creating jobs for medical care to be delivered, and more medical care can be delivered at a lower price. So everyone benefits.
Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, if I could just add one point to that, Ira, if I may. I mean, I think there's a useful historical analogy to what Howie's just describing. Think about the bank teller, right? So the job of the bank teller 3-4 decades ago involved helping you get money out of your savings account. Well, we automated that part of it, And it doesn't mean that bank tellers went away. In fact, people were predicting that there'll be no more bank tellers. But what actually happened is the opposite. So the role of what a bank teller is changed quite dramatically to doing these higher order, if you like, human interactions and other functions that didn't involve simply helping you get money out. In fact, the number of bank tellers went up, mostly driven by the fact that there was more demand. We opened more branch banks, and so the number of people working as bank tellers actually went up.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as we create robots, we also will need to create the software, the artificial intelligence, just the code that has to be programmed into these robots. So there is that a job gain there?
So,
oh, absolutely.
Sorry,
go ahead.
So in that regard, not only are we creating jobs because we've empowered the American worker, but we're also creating jobs for people to deploy, maintain, and perhaps operate these robots. And these are fine jobs to have. On top of that, we're also creating lots of jobs for software developers, higher level thinking and creativity to make our mechanisms that much more capable.
We now have lots of websites, videos, whatever, that teach people things, but they're not teachers. Are we going to be replacing teachers, or do teachers have a special place because they're in schools, they're more hands-on with the students? What do you think about that, James?
Well, I think when we did our analysis, I think teachers were actually in the category of the least likely to be automated for most of the reasons you just described. Because keep in mind that one of the things that's quite fascinating on this question of jobs and automation is that you sort of have to think through four or five different factors. One is the question of technical feasibility. Can you actually technically automate the task? But there's a whole other set of considerations, the cost of doing that, the alternative labor supply dynamics, the benefits of doing that, but also the social acceptance. I mean, there are things that we I think, in a social sense, think ought to be done by humans. So I think when you take all that into account, education and teachers and a lot of caregiving are likely to be things that we're going to, at least for the near term anyway, want to have humans do that.
Mm-hmm. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking about robotics and about automation, old topics we've been talking about for over 100 years, about what's the workplace going to be like. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Pittsburgh, PA. Matt, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, yeah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
So I work for a delivery company. I won't name them, but they don't have any infrastructure in the area. I just work through the app, so it's kind of like my job is working under a robot already. So hearing this segment kind of just made me think about, well, first of all, delivery jobs probably won't be there in the future because it's an obvious place for automation. And second of all, it's kind of different when you don't have a boss that you talk to every day and you just sign into an app and, like, get punished through the app or have to call off through the app. It's a little different.
Yeah, tell me, wait a minute. What do you mean you get punished through the app?
Well, the app will be like, oh, you didn't pick up that order fast enough. Like, what happened? And then they'll be like, if I don't make the order on time, then I don't get paid the full amount that I'm owed.
And you have no recourse to go to your boss because there's no boss sitting in the office next door.
Yeah, exactly. The boss is in Philadelphia. They don't have any infrastructure in the Pittsburgh area.
Wow. Let me ask my guests. Howie, what do you think of that, James? Are you guys there?
Yeah.
So go ahead, Howie.
Oh, please. You please go ahead.
Now, I was going to say, one of the things that, to the caller's point, one of the tasks that's actually very hard to automate, at least in the work that we looked at, was the idea of managing and goal setting and the kinds of things that managers do. So while the task may be easy to complete in the way that the caller's describing, the whole process of managing and setting goals is actually very difficult. So there is something lost when, in fact, as the caller describes, there's no way to recourse, no way to discuss and apply judgment to the things that the caller described may be punishing or not. So that is something that could be lost.
Howie, do you have any something to add?
I have nothing to add to that.
Okay, let's go to see if we can get our last call in this hour. Let's go to Rochester, New York. Hi, Mike. Welcome.
Thank you. Great show.
Thank you.
So my concern is, as automation continues to progress, how are we going to restructure our world so it works for everybody?
Small topic. Well, it is a worldwide, the Earth is flat. The world is flat now. Do you think about this, James, at McKinsey?
I actually do, and I thank the caller for asking the question, because I think it depends what we're trying to solve for. Because on the one hand, if we're trying to solve for work, meaning other things for people to do, I think there'll be plenty of things for people to do. But if the question is, how do we solve for things like incomes and wages, that may be a slightly different question. Because one of the things that happens, by the way, economically, is that as people work in a way that's augmented with technology, in many instances, not all, but in many instances, that sometimes has a depressive effect on the wages for the person working with the technology. Not always. So the question is, if we're trying to solve for other things for people to do, I think that's an easier thing to solve for. But if we're trying to solve for incomes and standards of living and so forth, that becomes much more problematic. We may have to think about, you know, when much of the work driving output in the economy is being done by machines, what do wage models look like in that world? And that's a big question. And I think it gets to some fundamental, sometimes ideological questions about work, wages, and incomes.
Yeah, it's being debated, and certainly in this political season. I thank both of you for taking time with us today. James Manyika is a senior partner at McKinsey & Company and director of the McKinsey Global Institute in San Francisco. Howie Choset is a professor of robotics at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Thank you both for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you, Ira.
You're welcome. Have a good weekend.